I'm here at the Theatre Royal, and I'm very privileged to be talking to Blanche McIntyre, who's the director of Arcadia. Blanche, my first question, probably start with a nice difficult one. I'm going to travel back in time to my 1809, which was actually 1979, and I'm at school, and we're studying a play called Professional Foul by Tom Stoppard. And I remember not getting it and hating it. And then a few years later, when I was older, I read it and absolutely got it and loved it. And over the years, I've seen a lot of Tom Stoppard, including this play, and we're going to go and see it again on Tuesday. And so I've got the baggage of Tom Stoppard, past and present, with me. When you direct this play and come to this script for the first time, do you treat it as a complete thing in itself, as if it's new? Or does that baggage of all the history of Tom Stoppard and all of the plays he's done, does that play into the director's role?
I think you have to treat it as though it's new. Obviously, it's completely terrifying. Anyone who approaches a Stoppard does that, knowing that he's one of the greatest living writers. In this case, knowing that he's just opened his new play as well at the National. So it's a landscape that's full of challenge and full of fear. But I think part of being a director is that you have to. Part of your job is that you have to decide what you think the play is saying and. Well, what it is as a piece of art, and how best to bring that across to an audience. So it's part of my responsibility to try to make sure that what happened to you with Professional Foul doesn't happen. And I think one of the things that's been lucky for me working on Arcadia is that I love the play so much that I've never been able to bring myself to see it. So I don't have a template in the back of my mind for what to do with it. I'm approaching it completely fresh because I have to. And of course, that puts most of the audience who come to see the play will already have seen the play once or twice, so they will be in a better position to judge than me, I guess.
So in a way, it's important not to have all that baggage in the room, I guess.
I think it's useful. I think the most dangerous thing is where you've seen a really fantastic production. I saw a wonderful production of The Real Thing at the Donmar Warehouse back in the 90s, and it made such an impression on me that I know even now, if I was going to try and direct that play, there would be a part of me that simply wanted to recreate it, and I think that would be the biggest danger. If you see something which is a terrible production, you go out going, well, I could fix that. Mm. But a really good one, there's nothing you can do, you might as well just give up.
Can I be a fly on the wall of the early rehearsals for this play when you directed it? Could you take us into that rehearsal room?
Well, most of the time what would be going on would be that the actors would be saying, Blanche, explain the maths, and I would have a complete blank. but there are, of course, the ideas that are being talked about are a crucial part of the play, but a very much more crucial part of the play is the people who are doing the talking and how they relate to each other. So it would very much have been chatting about what this kind of behaviour is, why they might be doing it, for example, there's a very strong self-destructive streak in Septimus, and that comes out in different ways. There is a wonderful quality that Thomasina has. She's totally happy not to know things. She doesn't think that that's something she needs to be anxious about. So she's cheerfully asking, what is carnal embrace? As though that were a perfectly normal thing to do. Mm-hmm. And for a young teenager now, I think there is a certain amount of pressure to be worldly, to know what you're talking about, that the idea that you don't know something is often quite a scary thing for anyone to face up to. But Thomasina simply doesn't have that fear. Mm. So it was things like that. It's sort of, who are they, what are they doing, why are they doing it?
And as someone directing a play that essentially it's around a table, and one moment we're, you know, a long time in the past, and then we're back in the present. Is there enough in the play and in the way that he's written it that gives you all the help you need to do that transition, or do you have to bring something to it to make that happen?
I think there's enough in the play. At least I hope there is, the way that I've been trying to bring it out. One of the things I think that happens in the play is that you start off with these very clearly defined separate periods. It's very obvious that something is a period set in a different period. And the other period. Actually, 1990 is not modern day, but nonetheless very, very different from the Regency. And gradually, as the play goes on, the parallels between them become stronger, and the qualities of the different time periods start to mix, and then the time periods themselves mix as well. So in a funny kind of way, you need to know at the beginning that they're different, but you don't really need to know more than that, because seeing how they relate to each other is part of the fun of the play.
I don't want to give too much away. That's the whole thing about talking about this play. In terms of the balance between then each of the members of the cast finding the character and then actually realising the words as they're written, how do you work with actors for them to step into the character that actually works for you?
Well, I think every actor works in a different way. So some of the actors need to know what the psychology behind the language is before they can approach it. Some actors get in the same way that an actor might need the right pair of shoes and then finds the walk. They hear the rhythm of the sentence and then find the character from that. So you have to, when you're working with the actors, find out what their way into a character is and honour that as much as you can.
And as a director, back on the fly on the wall, do you tend to intervene, you know, and interrupt, or do you wait till something's done and then kind of debrief after?
It completely depends. If somebody's just done something really exciting, actually, I was going to say you step in. You don't step in. You let it happen. You let it roll to the end. Sometimes you need to step in because what they've just done has changed the scene, and then you need to go back instantly and try to put it in with the rest of the scene. The rest of the scene starts to evolve around it. But that's only if the idea is so hot that if you let it go till the end of the run, it'll cool. Most of the time, what's nice is that you let them run a chunk and then you discuss what came out of that. So you never stop it. At least I never step in and say, don't do that, change that. I like to let it come to an end and then say, that was really good, keep that. This made me think these things, let's work a bit more on that. So that what is happening is that the actor's creating the scene and I'm editing it.
Do male directors and female directors have different challenges directing Stoppard?
I don't know. I've never seen a male director direct Stoppard. Yeah. It's funny with directors because we're never in each other's rehearsal rooms. Mm. So I don't really know how different most directors are from the way that I work.
Mm. It's interesting. I hadn't thought about that. In terms of the dialogue, how do you lift that off the page? We're going to be sitting in a venue this next week, which I come to a lot, and it is very West Endy. It's very kind of, I'm sitting here, it's quite cold at the moment, you know, it's a large, you know, fairly old, lovely space. And those people, I was just in the box office before, and someone's buying the cheap tickets at the last minute. They're going to be sitting right up the back, and there's dialogue around a table. How do we, you know, bring that right to the back?
I suppose that's one of the magic skills that actors have, that ability to share something very intimate with the back row. I think it's partly the quality of the writing. If something is very heartfelt or if it's very funny, then people are going to warm to that. And one of the joys of Stoppard as a writer is that he gets what an audience needs a lot of the time. So something like this play begins with a couple of really wonderful, almost importance of being earnest style, lifted scenes which draw everybody in and make the ideas accessible and exciting and make the characters stand out vividly. And then after that, things start to mix up and get more complicated. But he knows in this play that you have to bring them with you.
And when this is touring round and you come into very different spaces, I mean, how much are you involved in going, oh, this is very different from the last one, we need to blah?
Oh, well, I think that's one of the joys of touring. That, for example, I took the Tonight at 8:30 plays here last year to Brighton, and they had come from Malvern and from Southampton and various other places, and the plays had changed because the audience response would be different. In Manchester, it was a much more vigorous and alive response from what it was in some of the smaller places that we took it to, where they had it, although they were listening in a much more quiet and thoughtful way. I rather like the Manchester response, but both were valid. But what's wonderful, because it's a live art form, the actors on every night instinctively take in how different the audience is. Are they laughing? Are they laughing at the intellectual bits? Are they getting the emotional bits? Are they laughing at the pratfalls? What sort of a beast is this audience? And then, without thinking about it, they will tailor the piece so that it meets that audience. So it changes according to who's in every night and where the town is that or the city is that we're in. So that's one of the fun things about touring a piece is exactly that, that you don't really have to do anything to change it because it will change by itself.
Back in 93, this play was called by several people, you know, one of the greatest plays by one of the greatest writers of the 20th century. And you've talked about, you know, the good writing here. What is it that you would nail about the writing that would make people say that?
Oh, that's a terrible question. I mean, terribly difficult. It's like saying, why is the Mona Lisa such a brilliant piece of art? I think there are some of the things that I love about it. It's I love the courage of the writing. I love that it thinks that it's a play that thinks that human beings are curious by nature. That's the point of it. Curious enough that if you show us something really extraordinarily interesting, we will go with it. It has this extraordinary faith in an audience to open up and listen and take very complex, very exciting ideas on board just because they're interesting. It has the most extraordinary heart, which you need for a play. It's I think some people have in the past leveled accusations at Stoppard that he writes for the head, not for the heart. I don't think that's true at all. I think they're incredibly heartfelt plays, and this really is one. It's dazzlingly funny. It's a sort of tour de force of all the things that you hope good writing would be, all together in one piece.
Also, back to my, you know, professional foul, and when I was old enough, I think, to get it, it made philosophy, you know, very much part of the human condition in the way we try to live it in our mundane, normal life, doesn't it? He brought philosophy into life.
I think all plays really need to be dealing with what is it like to be alive. I think if you write a play which is not about that, then in some way you've failed in what theatre is trying to do. And what's lovely about these plays is that they take in the more difficult aspects, that sometimes the more difficult cognitive aspects or philosophical aspects exactly of what human life is, and make them open to somebody who doesn't know, who hasn't studied, to think about them. They have extraordinary faith in the human brain, I think, as well as the human heart.
One final question, I guess a personal one. So in this play, we go back to 1809 and we're at the same table. You can choose any year you like and be sitting at that table compared to now in your life. What year would it be?
Oh, in my life? Yeah. What, between 1980 and now?
Well, no, you can go back as long as you want.
I think, well, I would, if to be sitting around a table talking about ideas, the time that I would think would be most interesting for me would be, this is even before 1809, in 1647-8, in the middle of the English Revolution, when everyone is talking about what is government, what is a man worth, what is a woman worth, what sort of way should we be leading our lives, and that these questions were incredibly vitally important and being debated up and down the country. And it's to be alive at a time when, and I know that it was a bloodthirsty, wretched time as well, I'm absolutely not wanting to gloss over that, but when these ideas are the centre of what government and human life are about, that seems to me to be a very exciting time to be having these sort of thoughts.
Blanche McIntyre, Director of Arcadia, thanks very much. And for the listeners, I wonder what your year would be. Thank you.